This is a podcast from Minute Media.
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Welcome, 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 everyone. Welcome back to another Wolves Fancast preview episode. It's Little Dan here hosting tonight, and with me I've got, after a little winter break, catching some vitamin D, I've got Kim Smith. How are we going, Kim?
Not too bad. Back and ready. Ready to go. Refreshed. Haven't thought of Wolves for the whole international break, but now I'm ready. I'm back on it. Ready for Saturday. 3 o'clock. Yeah. Come on, you. Yes, come on.
It's great to have club football back. I've made the conversation point before. I think football as a governing body should just draw the line in the sand now and tell footballers you're either an international player from now on or you're a club footballer. Give the viewing public more football, international games on a weekend, but I just want club football every weekend.
Until March, I'm just
absolutely bored of watching international football because, as far as I'm concerned, England just, I can't enjoy watching football anymore.
Wait till November, World Cup, you'll be loving it. You'll be back on the train, so you got to support the team, even if we are playing part-timers.
Yeah, England have let us down so many times now. I find it.
I'm not sure I can take the heartbreak again. I do agree with you there, but
I find it a struggle to watch England. Let me just get back to Wolves a second. 5 years ago tomorrow, Paul Lambert took charge of his first game for Wolves in a 0-0 draw against Preston at Deepdale. After the game, Wolves were 2 points above the relegation zone. Connor Cody was in centre midfield that day. That's literally just 5 years ago tomorrow. If you have a look at the team there, Andy Lonergan in goal, Bright Enabakari, Bod Varson up front. That was literally 5 years ago. How things can change so quickly in football. it is literally ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you look at some of the names on the bench there, John Flatt, Joao Teixeira, you got Romain Saiss and Connor Cody, two players in that squad 5 years ago that have got their eyes on World Cup 22 next year. It's just 5 years ago, that is. How ridiculous is that?
I mean, I don't want to sound like a typical fan, but look how far we've come, Dan. Look how far we've come.
Me and you, Kim, we try not to be fickle. We try not to get over emotional like the majority of the fan base do. But that's literally 5 years ago. And I just want to congratulate Connor Cody and the England squad sealing their place at the Qatar 22 World Cup after that 10-0 win against San Marino the other day. I mean, 10-0 at any form of football is decent. But what's your sort of feelings on comments about restructuring World Cup qualification because of teams like San Marino and Gibraltar and the like?
I mean, they are like this game was a complete waste of time, wasn't it? I mean, I didn't watch it because I was actually flying home at the time, and I literally turned my phone on and was like 10-0. My first reaction was Codes must have scored, but he obviously didn't, although he did take the captain's armband, didn't he? So that was good. But then in terms of the quality, I think they need to restructure it just to make the games a bit more competitive. You know, aren't they like the lowest ranked team in the world, San Marino? They're literally the worst team in the world.
Yeah, I don't think they've won a game in something like 10 years. It's just getting to the point there where, apart from teams, I mean, they had like sort of wooden sponsorship around the pitch. That's just... They haven't got enough money invested in their level of football, and it's just they're putting these like footballers to the sword against elite level players. It's unfair on them. It's a waste of time for the actual team. Mm. And they need to do something, but it's unfair to actually take away international football from them, isn't it? We've actually got a special guest on tonight. I've kept him waiting in the sidelines. I've had him and Tony Daly doing some stretches before he comes on, but we've got former Wolves winger, legend, Matt Jarvis with us tonight. How are you doing, Jarvo? Well, he was there a minute ago. I think he's doing some more stretches. Yep, this is going to be another one of those Barry Douglas episodes where I'm going, how you doing, Matt?
Here he is.
How are we doing? Sorry, I don't know what's happened just there.
See, we've had a bit of a glitch, but it's good to have you with us. How are things with you? Enjoying retirement?
I'm well, thank you. Enjoying retirement? Yes. Obviously, you know, love to be able to keep playing, and you know, I love the training, I love the competing, I love obviously the playing, but the time was right, and yeah, it was a good decision. So I am enjoying, you know, being at home, being able to, you know, I've got two kids now, so the time was perfect. So I'm enjoying seeing the other side of it, which is interesting. It's good. It's nice to actually see the other side of it as well. So it's something to learn and to enjoy.
What are you missing? Are you missing the regimented side of the game in regards to being at training at a certain time, or is it more the camaraderie with a squad?
I mean, you massively miss the, you know, the banter, the training, the being around everyone. But I have to say, you know, I've been drilled for 20 years, that regimented, that routine, that, you know, just, you know, waking up in the morning. Luckily, I suppose at the minute, you know, I'm up, I'm with the kids, I'm doing school, I've got things that keep me sort of occupied. But it is a big culture shock when you wake up, you go to training, then you go through the whole routine, it's just all done, everything's, you know what's going to happen, whereas now it's all up in the air, but it's quite exciting.
What did you make to mine and Kim's comments in regards to San Marino and the World Cup qualification restructuring that seems to be a clamour for at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I do agree. I did watch the game. I did, because, you know, I still enjoy watching England play. It is just, you know, when you look at it 10-0, you know, you shouldn't win any international game 10-0. But like you mentioned, you can't really, can you take that away from them? But actually being able to play for their country and in these competitions, but maybe, you know, there's got to be a plan for how they qualify to get through to them playing these sort of games. So I do think there needs to be some restructure, especially with everything that's been talked about with potentially being World Cups every 2 years. And, you know, there's not going to be enough time to do everything. So I think that there's definitely got to be some discussion on that. Yeah.
How does it sort of sit with you when a player like Connor Cody at a club the size of Wolves plays for England on a regular basis compared to your timer?
I think it's fantastic. You know, Connor's what a guy, great player. He's, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a real leader. It was great to see him get the captain's armband as well, because I just think if you look, you know, where he's been in that squad and Gareth Southgate, and everyone sort of mentioned how what a sort of a team player, what a morale booster, what a great guy he is to be around the squad. Even though he didn't play much in the summer or at all in the summer, he's still so valuable, and it's great to see him there. He deserves it. And yeah, I mean, it's he's taken the mantle from when I was there, so that's always disappointing.
I'll say it must have been a nice stat to have on your side, being the last Wolves player after Steve Ball to play for England. You've seen sort of the transformation in Wolves in recent years since you left in the club. I mean, I'll quickly touch on sort of the Portuguese players that we've got here in front of us. Ruben Neves, João Moutinho, that they stuttered into the qualifying playoffs after a 0-0 draw against Ireland and a 2-1 defeat at home to Serbia. How would you have enjoyed working alongside those players at Wolves back in your time? The transformation's unreal, isn't it, money-wise?
It certainly is, yeah. I mean, you know, I absolutely loved my time when I was playing at Wolves. We had such a great squad, such a great morale. It was just a really great time to be playing for Wolves. But you look at, it's just contrast of what's happened at Wolves, you know, the caliber of player, the international players that are in the squad. I would have loved to have played in this squad. Yeah. Would have been exciting. I feel like I would have fitted in lovely. So it would have been lovely, great to have played.
I know you did see the one comment we had on our Twitter in regards to whether Wolves fans and yourself thought you could actually play in this team in that front three. What do you think about that in regards to specifically Bruno Lage likes to, from what I gather, likes three front players who work more narrow, where you more sort of an out-and-out winger, weren't you?
Yeah, but there's always that, you know, you always have to adapt and change and work and improve. So I was always willing to do that. Just, you know, if people's formations, you know, that sort of inside wide player, that became more of a thing recently. I started to do it a little bit more when at the back end, when I was at Norwich, we started to do that, the inside sort of wide players. But it's just nice to be, it'll be just great to be involved in an exciting attacking team. And that's what he's trying to achieve.
I think you would have struck up a great partnership with Raul, Matt. I really feel like Raul just seems to strike up partnerships with everyone, doesn't he? All the little out-and-out wingers, you know, Traoré, now Hwang. I think you could play in our team now.
Yeah, no, thank you. I totally agree. I think he relishes that, having the wide players that are, you know, putting crosses in and giving him the opportunity to score. And he seems, since, you know, scoring against Southampton, he seems to be, have really got back to what he does best, and his movement, his runs that he's making, and obviously getting a few goals does massively confidence booster for himself. And it's really nice to see.
Just quickly touching back on some of our players who have been away on international duty. Leander Dendonka didn't feature much again for Belgium, and he has struggled for game time recently for Wolves. I know you're not his biggest fan, Kim, but with his current situation, should he really be asking for a move away anytime soon, do you think?
Well, I think, because I had a look at the Belgium starting lineup, and I think they've got obviously KDB, Witsel, and a guy from Club Brugge, I think. So it's one of those, isn't it? He's not starting for Wolves. He's not starting for Belgium. And at the moment, obviously, we're not going to sell him unless we bring in, you know, your different sorts of midfielders that Bruno has said that he wants. So it's a difficult one for him, isn't it? Because he's obviously probably lacking match sharpness now, because he hasn't started many games for either Belgium or Wolves. And, you know, I did say, you know, a year ago, I wasn't overawed with the fact that he'd signed a new contract. Like, I think he does bring something different. However, I feel like he's been out of form for a while now. I think in the first season in the Premier League, that we were in the Premier League, he did really well. You know, but I don't know. I'm not sure he fits our style of play.
What's your opinion on Leander Dendonka, Matt? Obviously, watching from afar, I can't imagine you watch us every week as much as you'd love to watch Wolves every week like we do. But where do you see Leander Dendonka in this Wolves squad? Because he doesn't really seem to have a cemented place in any role that he plays, does he?
I think that's, unfortunately, it's that's his problem. Yeah, you know, he can't cement, that's where I'm playing, that's where I want to play, and then get yourself in the team playing in that position. I think it's always hard when a new manager comes in and changes it, and then you don't sort of feature. And I think that's where he's going to start questioning. He's coming up to January. If he's not going to be given the opportunity to play, where does he see himself? You know, he's not getting in the Belgium side again now, which is, must be in the back of his mind thinking, well, I need to be playing well with, you know, there's loads of competitions coming up. Do I look to potentially be moving in January? He's been very, I say, useful for Wolves. He's covered in so many different areas, and he's never let anyone down. He's always been a good player. He's popped up with some very important performances. So it's not something that people are going to be going, right, let's get rid of him, we don't need him. We definitely sort of, he's very important to the squad. It's just whether he can feature more than, well, enough for himself, I think, is more for the question.
Yeah. Obviously, we've got quite a few promising young talents in the Wolves squad at the moment. Obviously, Morgan Gibbs-White made his return to the under-20 squad. Fabio Silva's featured quite regularly for the Portuguese under-21s, considering he's only still 19. Portugal won 6-0 the other night, but Fabio Silva missed a penalty. And Keanu Holliver got his first goal for the Dutch under-20s in a 7-0 win against Gibraltar. What's your sort of mindset in regards to Fabio Silva, Matt? Obviously, he's still relatively young, got a lot of potential, but can Wolves look at loaning out a £35 million signing?
I think that's very difficult to loan someone like that out. He is very young. He got thrown into it, you know, hardly playing too many games, and then he's got thrown into the Premier League, which is the hardest league in the world, and everyone's got that expectation level of him, and it's very difficult to just jump in and be flying in such a young age. So it's going to take time for him to adapt to, you know, to progress and to become that player that everyone wants him to be. But he's learning from great players around him, and he's obviously got a coach that's going to be drilling him and adapting his game. So it's going to take time, and you just hope that he is still young, he's still going to be able to improve, and, you know, playing games is always going to help him.
What's your opinion on Fabio at the moment, Kim?
Difficult, isn't it? Because it's hard to imagine that they've 6-0, and ridiculously he hasn't scored, and he's missed a penalty. It's not the
it's a confidence
ideal
blow, isn't it? That penalty,
it's a real confidence blow for him. And I think his strike partner I saw scored a hat trick. You know, he started all of the under 21 games, like the last three or four, I think. So it's difficult, isn't it? The issue is, I think, if he wasn't a £35 million striker, we would be loaning him out. And if we didn't, and I guess, to be fair, if we had backup, then we would be. However, he's the only other out-and-out striker as a backup to Raul, you know, and I'm sure we'll get onto it in a bit. But Hwang cannot, I don't think, play up front as an out-and-out striker on his own. He's more of a plays-off a striker. Yeah. So, as I say, I don't think there's an option at the moment. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because under 23 football, he's going to stand out. He's going to look way above that level. But, you know, you've got to hope that this game time with the under-21s would at least give him a little bit more confidence, and it would probably be at a slightly higher level than the under-23s. But at the moment, he's coming on for Wolves here and there, isn't he? You know, 10, 15 minutes towards the end of the game, and it's probably not doing his confidence the world of good, you know, because he hasn't really got enough time to make an impact. So I'm still, like, positive that he'll come good, but it's just people having patience with him, the price tag, that's sort of the issue, isn't it, really?
I think anyone who's still doubtful that Fabio Silva will become a great striker needs to go back to our game, which we lost to West Ham last season at Molineux, and look at the movement and the finish past Fabianski. Mm. And going to bring Matt back on for a second, because I've just had a bit of a light bulb moment, but he's probably going to tell me that I'm wrong. Matt, when you were at Norwich, was Harry Kane about that time?
No, unfortunately not.
So no, I know he did have a loan spell at Norwich, didn't he? He had quite a few. I think he went to like Leicester and a few others.
I think that was when he was very young. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sort of put too much pressure on the lad, but I still think the way he's built. Obviously, he's still got a few years of filling out, and the movement that he's got, I still think he could be a late bloomer like Harry Kane. I think Wolves fans just need to get past the transfer value and just be patient with him, because he, for me, he is going to be a top striker. He just needs a bit of patience.
Yeah, it's always going to be difficult. You know, he didn't ask for that price tag, and when you come to a club and you come for a big fee, it's straight away the expectation level has just risen, and you're always going to be up against it. And when he's so young, and he's, you know, at the time, you know, he's playing, Jimenez is out, and you're relying on him to try and get you some goals, and it's not quite working. And then it's just everything just sort of comes a bit too much and he's trying too hard, and it just didn't sort of work for him. But he's still young. Everyone keeps forgetting he's 19. If he would have signed now, you know, it doesn't matter on the price. If he would have signed now, you think, actually, a 19-year-old, yeah, he's a very, very good player. It's just because of the expectation levels at the time needed someone to be that focal point, needed someone to be that striker to score them goals. And at that point in time, it wasn't him.
How many strikers are you aware of in sort of the Wolves' history, Kim, that have scored 2 goals against West Brom and don't get the adoration that Fabio... I know we didn't win the last game, but he scored 2 goals against West Brom and the fans still haven't taken to him as much as he deserves.
I don't think in my lifetime any player scored 2 goals against West Ham for Wolves, against West Brom for Wolves, apart from Fabio Silva. You know, I just think people need to lay off him because, as you guys said, he's only young. He's only going to get better. And you can tell, you know, we had the conversation in the chat, Dan. He's at least bulking up and getting stronger and working on things. So I think, yeah, I'd like to see him get a little bit more game time. But obviously with Bruno making subs in the last 10 minutes, it's a bit difficult for him at the moment. But hopefully, like, learning from Raul, you know, in terms of his all-round play. And as you say, he's got great movement. So, yeah, I'm still positive about his future at Wolves.
You mentioned new South Korean hero, Hwangi Chan. He scored against UAE in the first round of the current fixtures, the last round of fixtures, sorry, and then they went on to beat, who was it? Iraq 3-0 in Qatar on Tuesday night. What have you made of his start to Wolves, Matt? Obviously, he scored, I think, is it 4 or 5 goals now?
I've been very impressed. I think he's exactly what Wolves needed. I think he's I would say you're a typical Wolves player, but he works hard for the team first and foremost. You can see whatever position he's playing, whether he's been up striker on his own or if he's playing out wide, he works hard for the team. He's chasing fullbacks all the way back. He's got that energy levels, which is guaranteed for Wolves. I think he's got great touch, great ability. And obviously that goal scoring touch is a huge plus because it just takes a little bit of pressure off Jimenez. I think he's the main man. You know, he scores the goals. He does everything, Jimenez, but you need someone else to help him. And I think Wang's been that perfect partner, and also, you know, he in himself, he's a very, very good player. And as I said, I think he's a, you know, that typical Wolves player that all the fans would really take to, because you can see his energy levels, his commitment, and obviously it means everything to score for the club.
After the recent travelling in the last week, Kim, do you think Wolves can afford to start with either out Raul or Hwang against West Ham on Saturday?
Simple answer is no. I think, especially Raul, like when we obviously benched Raul for Villa, I think we really, really struggled to keep hold of the ball. I don't think that, as I said earlier, I don't think that Hwang is a player who can sort of start up top on his own. I think he looked really lost, and I think, if I remember rightly, gave the ball away so many times when he played up front on his own against Villa. So I just can't see how we can't start them. But obviously I can see why we wouldn't. You know, I think Raul's, did he play? I think he's played 90 minutes, so all of the games. And I believe he's back today with, I'm sure, jet lag. So for me,
there are murmurs that he might not be at least playing the whole game on Saturday. Whether I think it's one of them. If he feels he's capable of doing it, you start him and just see how long he lasts in his own sort of mindset. Whether he wants to come off, but knowing Raul, he'd play another 180 minutes, wouldn't he?
I think what I would say is, if Raul isn't like fit enough to start, I would actually start with Fabio. I know that's quite a controversial thing to say, but at least he's a bit more of a presence with Hwang again. I would imagine he will start with Hwang off him. I don't think it works with all Pedence, Traore. I just don't think it works with them up top because they don't hold onto the ball enough. So that yeah, probably a controversial thing to say, but I do think that I'd prefer Silva to start than Traore or Pedence up top.
What's your current feelings on Adama Traore, mate? Obviously, he's been linked to every decent club on earth, really, at the moment. Because just in Europe, but just everywhere in the world, he's been linked to at the moment. Obviously, contract negotiations seem to be ongoing, maybe stalling. What's your opinions on Traore as a player and his future at the moment?
I think, you know, just starting with the, you know, contract, you just never know what's going on, whether that's a factor why he's not playing. Yeah, there's loads of different
theories. Bruno's mentioned that apparently the contract isn't an issue. And then I mentioned to you earlier about Bruno wanting sort of three players who play more narrow. Is that why he's out?
Potentially. But for me, you have to play him. I think, you know, he's improved so much at Wolves, and you look at his link-up play with Jimenez, in the current team, in that attacking threat, you need someone like him that's going to be able to take the ball up the pitch. You know, he's going to have that threat of crossing and setting up chances. I think when Jimenez wasn't there, I feel like he decided that he was going to, if anything was going to happen, he'd have to do it all himself. And then he tried to do everything on his own. And obviously it didn't really work to a degree, but he's got now Wang and Jimenez that help. And it's not just when he gets the ball, there's three players around him and he's got to try and beat four or five people and put a cross in or shoot. I feel like now there's more threat in the team. I think, you know, if Jimenez is in the middle with Wang on the other side and Traore's got that opportunity to take players on, it's a no-brainer for me. But, you know, I understand the idea of trying to play slightly narrow, but Traore could do that. If you ask any fullback or any defender, would they want to play up against Traore or whoever else that's going to be up against them, they would definitely want to play whoever else, not Traore, because they're afraid of that power and strength and pace, and that's what he can bring to a team. I agree, like the substitutes having 10 minutes, and if he comes on 10 minutes, it's too hard to get into a game. It's just not enough time. So for me, I would play him.
I think, I'm not sure how surprised you'd be, but the fan base is massively split on Adama. We've got a comment from Ben Griffiths that says, sell him. It's simple as that. You know how Wolves fans are, but Matt, we don't mince our words. Kim, what's your opinions on Adama? Obviously, 18 months left on his contract, being linked to Liverpool, Barcelona recently. Do you sell a player like Adama and reinvest it back in the squad that needs a bit more depth? Or is he, in my opinion, there's no other player in the world like him, so you need to have a player like that in your squad?
Firstly, I'm not sure if Ben Griffiths is someone I know. So if it is, I'll be having a word with him tomorrow about that comment. So it's difficult, isn't it? Because as time goes on, I feel like if he's not going to sign the contract, then we kind of have no choice to cash in. And as he's on the bench every game, it feels like his value is just decreasing every week. So for me, I think if I had the choice, I'd like him to sign the contract and stay, because he's such a unique player. And I know sometimes we can be a bit one-dimensional, where we almost get a little bit lost and it's just pass the ball to Adama and let's hope that he does something. But then there are games where he literally just, you know, draws the whole team into him and creates space for our other attacking players. So if it was up to me, I would keep him, but obviously with the caveat that he obviously signs the contract.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, to be honest. I think you're sort of forced in, because at the moment, if he's not playing, he's not going to be thinking, I want to sign this contract. You know, if you're not playing, why would you want to stay? But at the same time, if he does sign the contract, brilliant. If he doesn't, then you are stuck in a position that you think, well, if he's not playing now anyway, and he's not signing the contract, you get as much money for him as possible and invest it into the squad. But for me, I, as I said, I would play him.
when things got a bit, shall we say, sticky in sort of your later couple of years at Wolves, Matt, did you ever feel the same, that it was the players were wanting to get you on the ball and hoping you were going to do something?
No, to be honest, I absolutely loved it. I loved it. That was my whole role in the team, was to get the ball and to create opportunities and get the crowd off their feet. That was my role. That's what I had to do. So if I wasn't doing that, then I wasn't playing well, or I wasn't doing my role in the team. So I didn't feel that pressure as such. No. That's what I was meant to do. That was what I was in the team. So I can understand, you know, if I was like Traore and we didn't have our striker, our main striker that was out, and I think the pressure just starts building, because they'll, like Kim said, I think he's, if the team's struggling and have that point where there's not really anything, he can do something. He can take that upon himself and hold off three people and go up the line and take another four people on and then put the ball in the back of the net. He's got that ability to do it. It's just, it's if and when that happens. So it's a difficult one, but I don't feel like with Jimenez and Wang being back and in the team, I think it's the perfect opportunity for him to show his qualities.
Right, let's talk about another player that's out of contract at the end of the season. The Moroccan Maldini, Romain Saïss. He captained his nation to a 3-0 win against Sudan. Didn't feature in the second game, but Morocco have already qualified for a playoff match where they'll play one of Algeria, Cameroon, Congo, Egypt, Ghana, Mali, Nigeria, Senegal, or Tunisia. What's your feelings on Saïss, Kim? Because obviously he's been indifferent. He's used to play midfield for us. It has become a part of our defensive unit in the last sort of three months. Him and Kilman have really raised the game. But is he another one we really should be trying to get a deal sorted with?
Is his contract? His contract's coming to an end, isn't it, as well?
End of this season.
Isn't it? He's not. He's obviously now a fully fledged centre back. I can't see him moving back into midfield now, personally. I think he plays centre back, doesn't he, for Morocco as well?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's been times where I haven't been his biggest fan. I think he does have those lapses in concentration at times. However, he's not exactly let us down. He's been quite solid. I think, obviously, Kilman's been the outstanding player, I would say, really, for Wolves this season so far. So I guess he's been kind of overshadowed. But I feel like he's never let us down. But at the same time, he has been, when you flashed up the team from 5 years ago and he was on the bench, it's like, is it time for to sort of move him on? So I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't offer him a contract. However, I wouldn't be too worried if we almost just kept him as a decent squad player and then sort of brought in some reinforcements in January or to next season.
I suppose it's the ambitions of the player, isn't it, Matt? Like you said, 5 years ago, he was on the bench at a team in the bottom half of the Championship. Now he's couple of games away from captaining his country to a World Cup. It's ridiculous how quickly football moves on, isn't it?
Exactly that. When you get the opportunity to play and you get a run in the team, you know, it's amazing how quickly football moves on. And you know, it's all experiences as well. You know, being on the bench 5 years ago, but look what's happened at the club, and he's been involved in a lot of it. You know, he's coming to the team in lots of different positions, but sort of recently, as you say, going back to centre half, and there's been quite a few injuries, and he's filled that void, and he's done very well. Yes, there's, you know, always going to be little bits and pieces and mistakes, but he's been a great part of the squad. So it's now up to, again, both parties to feel like, am I going to be playing? Am I going to be involved as much as I would like? Am I happy to be a squad player? Or do I find myself wanting to be playing every week somewhere else? But then it's on the club whether they would like him to be in and around the place and be used if and when.
We've got a similar player on the books. similar to Dendonka. Obviously, Willy Bolly has been struggling for game time. Ivory Coast failed to make it out of their group after losing to Cameroon 1-0 in the deciding game of the group. Obviously, been struggling to get into the Wolves side. Another player will be maybe tempting wanting a move in the future. What do you think about that?
I think he's not this season. When last season, the season before, he's been instrumental. Him and Cody, I think, you know, loads of clubs were into him, and he was like, you know, he was going to be that next centre half. Obviously, injuries are horrible, and they take it out. But I still think, for me, you know, when he's fit and he's playing, he's a proper centre half. He's a proper someone that's going to head it, kick it. He's quick. He's strong. He's a good defender. I think you'd be definitely want to keep hold of him for me. Obviously, injuries, you know, make sure he's all right. But yeah, he's a proper defender.
Did Bolly have COVID, Kim?
Yeah, I think he's had so many issues, hasn't he, this season? I think at one point he had the injury. Then he had just little niggles and knocks. Then he had COVID. And then I just think he had like a normal sort of general illness. It feels like that's why I'm starting to think that is he like ever just going to play regularly for Wolves again, like without sounding too negative about it. Because obviously if he's fully fit and, you know, completely ready to go, he's probably still our best centre-back by a mile, I would say. However, is he 29 or 30 now? So, you know, you never know. Is it time to cash in at the end of the season? I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play again this season.
How does it, from a footballer's point of view, Matt? Obviously, the likes of Dendonka, Sace. Obviously, Sace is coming towards the end of his contract. Are you looking for sort of one big move when you're coming to an end of a contract? How easy is it to renew with a club when you're going into your last year of a deal? Obviously, we've gotten into sort of the pounds and stuff.
Yeah, so difficult, depending on your situation. You know, if you've played loads of games and you're still playing and you're coming into the end of your contract, depends on your age. It depends on loads of things. But you ultimately, as a player, you want it done, whether you are or whether you're not, as
you
quickly
want security,
as possible.
Don't you?
Yeah, you want to know, because you don't want to be sort of if, buts and maybe and waiting till the end of the season and then suddenly you haven't really played all season and then you're told that you're not going to get offered a contract and then you're now scraping around thinking, right, I need to move, but now I haven't played all season. So you just start as soon as you don't play, you start moving down the pecking order a lot and people sort of forget, oh yeah, I forgot about him, I haven't seen him play this season. And it just, although it's just, you know, everyone says it's just a season, it's not. You go out of people's mindsets, and it's you as players, you just want it sorted as quickly as possible. You want to know where you're going to be playing. You want to make sure your family's settled, and you want to be playing. You want to be part of that team. So it's unfortunately that's football. You've got to take the rough with the smooth.
Obviously, you played for some top sides in your career. Where does your sort of time at Wolves rank? Obviously, we've got a comment from Ed, love Jaro, even his chairs are Wolves colours.
I absolutely loved my time at Wolves. I just think, you know, being, I think I was 20 when I signed, I was a bit more of an unknown when I went there, and to have 5 amazing years there, it was so enjoyable. I think, you know, first year going and finishing, we missed out playoffs by 1 goal, and then to blitz the championship the next year, and then have 3 seasons, and then have 3 seasons of Premier. It was a dream come true for me. You know, going up the leagues and then playing pretty much week in, week out, and winning games is enjoyable. And then, you know, first 2 years was fantastic, and the group of players that we had, and we're all still very close now. I think that was so enjoyable as a player to have that journey. And the Premier League was just the best thing in the world. Playing week in, week out with everyone was great. Molineux Stadium, the atmosphere. I genuinely, it was amazing.
Any Jarvar moments that stand out for you, Kim?
It's too many to even, well, I don't know where to start. I suppose, can't even think now.
I'll jump in then to save the embarrassment, because often this moment goes quite unnoticed because you scored some decent goals for us. Obviously, we're key to get his promotion. You remember, obviously, you got this the Chaucer kit from that promotion season. The goal that you scored away at Derby County, the equaliser, I think that gets sort of forgotten about, but that was a key goal, wasn't it, in that sort of run for promotion?
That game was, I think you could see by everyone's celebration how important it was. Keo was amazing that day. Yeah, he scored the opener, and then the equaliser. I've actually got that picture framed because of the celebration. I got mud all down my shirt. I'm slid in at the far post to get the equaliser, and it was just the eruption of celebration and everyone. And then Marlon Harewood, I think, came on and set up, and I think that Keo scored the winner.
Keo scored the winner from the Harewood assist.
And then you should see everyone was sprinting down the touchline. All the subs were jumping on. The celebration, that was such a key game. I think that after that one, everyone was just like, yeah, this is it. But that was pure passion and emotion. The celebration, as I said, I've got that frame, that picture, because it was like me just like that with mud all down the shirt going, yeah, it was such a great great equalising and feeling to then go on to win the game, which was huge for us.
We've got various comments. People mentioned, obviously, the goal against Villa that got you the England cap, wasn't it? The goal against West Ham in the 3-1 win, that was another big win that night, and probably one of my favourite goals that you scored, because it was quite an accomplished finish, wasn't it?
That was the one that I was thinking of. I knew it. I remember that goal like it was yesterday now. I do.
It was live on Sky.
Yes.
It was, I mean, what a game, to be honest. It was
such an important game, wasn't it, at the time?
Yeah, both. We were both sort of scrapping for it at the end of the season. And it was really good atmosphere. I think, Doyle scored early. And Zubar scored, and then I made that run. And Jonah is always going to find you. And it, as you said, the one touch and then shot across. And it's the only time I've ever sort of done a celebration, is because my mates from school, we always used to do this silly sort of like goggles celebration, like when we were on holiday or whatever. And it's the only time I've ever done it. And I ran into the corner like that, and live on Sky, and they were buzzing. But it was just what an atmosphere, because it meant so much to everyone that it was a huge 3 points to keep us in the league. It was a great game.
We've just mentioned a few of your goals there. Obviously, the Villa volley. Martin Webb asked, sort of, where do you rank your best your three best goals?
Three? I don't know. I think I always say the Villa one purely and simply because yes, it was a great goal, but the actual meaning behind the goal is that goal got me in the England squad. Capello told me that I was close, and that goal actually, he said, that goal got you in. So I always say that just because it has that meaning behind it. But I think, I don't even know if you remember, do you remember last sort of few games we played Wigan away and I scored? That was a great goal.
I think I actually posted that on our Twitter page the other day. It was,
yeah,
Wolves were already dead and buried, but it was like
that was a great
proper FIFA R1 circle top corner. The keeper had no chance, didn't
it? Yeah, I like that one. I did like that one. I can't even remember the other ones, to be honest.
You've got one goal against Blackpool at home. It's the only goal that I've ever missed, because I was still queuing outside. It was that early into the game.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I think it was it Adam Hamill that laid it across and finished it. Was it that goal? Yeah.
4-0 win, yeah. Obviously, Ed's enjoying the comments. He was driving home, listening to the West Ham game. Jarvar scored, heard it on the radio. I went mental at a red light. I knew we were staying up. Obviously, some great memories there. Amar asked in our Twitter page earlier, was there any regrets at not staying at Wolves and trying to get us back up, or was it you had to keep in the Prem?
Unfortunately, no, not a regret. I don't regret really anything. I absolutely loved my time at Wolves, and it wasn't because I didn't want to play for the club anymore. It was purely and simply I was in and around the England squad. I needed to be playing back in the Premier League. I wanted to play in the Premier League, and the opportunity arose for me to go, and I wanted to take it. That was it. There was nothing to do with anything else. It was purely football. I wanted to carry on playing in the Premier League. As I said, I love the club. Have so much affection for the fans and everyone associated with it. So it was never ever that I didn't want to play for the club. I just wanted to carry on. I felt like my performances warranted me to get back and play in the Premier League.
Anything from you, Kim, in regards to asking Matt any more questions? Because I could just bombard him with questions all night. The assist for Ella Kobe at home to Man United, that was another iconic Wolves win.
I think the biggest one that I always get told about or asked about is the Nottingham Forest one with Chris Ovalumo.
The 5-0. 5-0,
5-1, I think it was. Yeah, that always gets going because me and Looms always have a thing over the years because he never ran over to celebrate with me. He ran off somewhere else. And everyone was giving him pelters for years, and it was one of them, like, on this day that goal was shown again and he was getting pelters, and then he did like a video of him doing press-ups and apologising and saying, sorry Jarvo, I should have come and celebrated with you. So we've always had that together, but that was a great day.
It was very similar. Have you ever seen that video of Thierry Henry running past Jamie Carragher?
Yeah, yeah.
You leaving Wes Morgan looking like he was like treading mud.
Yeah.
How rapid you were on that cross. Yeah. Let's quickly get back to the last bit of international duty. Obviously, Raul played 180 minutes. Mexico luckily just managed to qualify on goal difference in front of Panama. As I said, murmurs coming out that he might actually start the game on Saturday. Qatar 2022, you see some of the teams that have qualified already, Germany, Spain, England, Brazil, France, Belgium. You can see the likes of Portugal could play, one of sort of Italy, Wales, Sweden, Poland. I really want Cristiano Ronaldo to be at that World Cup, but they've got a tough couple of fixtures there, Portugal, whether they make it through. Where's obviously looking at those countries there, Matt, who's your early money on to win next year? How often do countries like sort of regain their World Cup? I mean, France are probably one of the most exciting teams at the moment, but how often do countries retain the World Cup?
It's so difficult. You can never tell, can you? If you're looking at it at the moment, you'd say obviously England have got a great chance. You'd say Germany, Spain are really, they're getting that other, you know, crop of young players that are all coming through. Belgium, but France, you know, the squad is incredible. So I will be definitely sitting and enjoying it, and hoping for, like you said, I would love Ronaldo. I'm a Ronaldo fan, so I'd love him to be there and just, you know, watch him as well. Special player.
What about you, Kim? Where's your early money?
Pretty much the same. I'm obviously a big England fan, so yeah, my money is on England, and I think by that point we've got one of the best young teams there. Portugal, I'm not so sure on. I think they've got a lot of players who are almost coming to the end of their career. So for me, it'd be England, France, or Belgium. I would say those are probably the three front runners. Maybe Brazil. I don't know. I haven't watched Brazil for a while, so I'm not sure.
Can you imagine some of the carnage at Christmas parties next year if England were to win the World Cup?
I certainly can. Yes, it'll be epic. It would be epic.
I can't imagine watching World Cup games like in the cold. It feels a bit strange, doesn't
it? Everyone's going to be in sort of on the outdoor squares throwing like hot chocolate in the air when England score.
Hot chocolate and Baileys, I imagine. It'll be so strange, definitely. I've just never experienced it, but it will be something that hopefully everyone will be enjoying.
Let's quickly get back to Wolves. Great to see the likes of Johnny Otto, Pedro Neto, Yerson Mosquera starting their rehab. How much on a scale of 1 to 10 over Wolves missed Pedro Neto, Matt?
I was going to say he's the player. He was so good for Wolves. When he first signed, he showed glimpses, and you were like, oh yeah, he's decent, but it just wasn't he wasn't always clicking. And then he played bits and pieces, and then he just got in the team, and he just never turned back. He was the standout player, and it's so disappointing for him to be injured and be out, because I think that he just adds something so different to Wolves' attack line, and he's a real miss. So I'll be delighted to see him back.
How excited are you for the return of Johnny Kim? Obviously, he's always been a solid, quite similar to Kevin Fowley, isn't he, Matt, in regards to just constantly being reliable, always above 7.5 out of 10 every game minimum, isn't it?
Definitely.
He's like so underrated, isn't he? I think we seem to have had so many different players play there since he's been injured, and none of them have been up to the standard of Johnny. You know, okay, so he doesn't give you the Semedo levels of attacking threat. However, he's quite underrated in terms of going forward. He still brings a lot to the team, and he's just so defensively solid. So I think, as well as Neto, I think having Johnny and Neto back will almost feel like two new signings, providing they obviously recover in the same player. And just going back to Traore, maybe that's Wolves' plan if they see that Neto's making a great recovery. Would Traore get in ahead of Hwang and Neto? I don't think so. So maybe that's what they're looking at. If he's up to the standard of being fit and raring to go, maybe they'll look to cash in on Traore.
You can tell you work in marketing with lines like two new signings when the squad depth is minimal. Let's quickly touch on the weekend's game at home to West Ham. Obviously, a few Wolves players played for both sides in the past. Paul Ince, Sir Henry Kamara, Colin Cole, Kevin Keane, Sean Newton. And then we've got Matt's period. Obviously, Matt, Roger Johnson and Marlon Ayrwood, who had that assist away at Derby. Matt, obviously, if there's any West Ham fans, I'm really trying not to be naive and ignorant. But do you notice a difference in size of a club like West Ham to Wolves? Because for me, Wolves are a much bigger club than West Ham. But how do you see it without shooting yourself in the foot with both fans?
Yeah, very true. Yeah, thanks.
But West Ham have never won the main division in English football. They've won the FA Cup once.
The location is massive. You know, being in London adds a huge dimension. You know, just even, you know, for instance, as players, when you have to do commercial bits, you do bits and pieces after training to go off and do that. West Ham in London, there's so much of it. There's Wolves, we still used to do loads, but not as much at West Ham. I think that's just the London factor, I think, that comes out with that.
What's your opinions on West Ham, Kim? Obviously, they've got quite a few exciting players now. Obviously, Declan Rice and Suchek, probably maybe the best midfield pairing in the league at the moment.
Yeah, I think Declan Rice is such a good player, and that's just me with my England hat on, I suppose. I think he's improving greatly, quickly, and I can see him moving to sort of your Chelsea or Man United next season. But I think just generally they've got so many players all over the pitch, haven't they? Like attacking threat, and I am a little bit worried about this game. I don't know why, but I do think we're going to struggle defensively because, you know, they've got Bowen, Fornells, Benrahma, and obviously Antonio, who we all know that Cody will probably struggle against Antonio because he always tends to with, you know, your really strong sort of target man strikers. And obviously Antonio's very quick. So, yeah, I know that Antonio's been on international duty, but they've paid 100k, haven't they, to make sure he's back on time. So he's already back. So he's definitely going to be starting. So, yeah.
So he's gone from Kingston, Jamaica to Kilman's back pocket in the space of a few days. Ooh. You can crack me on that on Sunday. Wolves versus West Ham in the Premier League. We've played each other 10 times. Wolves have won 5, lost 4 and drawn 1. Obviously, we mentioned the 3-1 win when Matt was there on Saturday. It is going to be quite an even game. Last time out at Molineux, we lost 3-2 at home. Obviously, West Ham had that 38-minute blitz against us, which was quite shocking to see at the time. Obviously, then Donker got a goal just before half-time, and that goal from Fabio Silva was quite impressive. What was your opinions on that game at the time, Kim?
It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? I felt like in that game, the game was just over within that period. I didn't feel like... It was one of those, it was forgettable, wasn't it? It was behind closed doors. We were just petering out that season. I feel like it's going to be a completely different game because you know what Wolves fans are like. We won't be, well, I'd imagine most Wolves fans will almost not be expecting to lose, but not expecting to win. And I think that's where we can really back the team on Saturday and really, you know, yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. I won't give you my score prediction yet, but I think it's going to be a good game. And I think you can't really compare the games like last season. Like, I just think that was almost a write-off, wasn't it, in the end? Different manager, different, you know, no fans there. We'll just forget about that one.
Any Molineux atmospheres that strike a chord with you, Matt, from your time there?
To be honest, the atmosphere was always great. It was just so good for me, you know, whatever the score, whatever, whenever I used to get the ball, I used to feel the crowd, like they used to
you hear the siege dropping on.
Yeah, you just hear everyone wanting spurring you on, go take him on. Yeah, and it was just, so for me, it was perfect. That's all I ever wanted or needed as a player is have the fans behind you, and you just get that extra impetus to go and do it. I would do it, but when you have the all of the fans behind you cheering you on, it makes such a huge difference. So I think that was a huge factor for Wolves with having no fans. I think that's a tough thing to do. And on the flip side, I think West Ham did extremely well because they didn't have any fans. Yeah. So I think, you know, like Kim said, I think it's a completely different game. West Ham are on a very good run.
They're just a solid unit now, aren't they?
David Moyes has just completely changed the way that they are mentally, physically, and as a team. They're all just riding that wave of winning, performing well, and everyone's performing well at the same time, which is obviously a massive, massive help. But Ogbonna being injured is the first sort of time that they've had someone that's in their sort of starting, they're settled starting a lineup that's now out for a while. And he's left-footed, left centre half, which although is only, you know, another centre half, maybe Dawson will come in and Zuma and move across. But it does make a difference when you're left-footed playing left centre half to a right-footed, then moving over to the left side when they all want to start to play out and they want to do other things. So that could be a factor. But that you know, you've seen that their thing of trying to get Antonio back. So they know how important he is.
Obviously, they got the 3-2 win at home to Liverpool last weekend. 3 shots on target. Obviously, one of them was a Alisson own goal, which gave them the lead. Liverpool had 70% of the possession that day, 16 shots. Liverpool are probably, it's between them, Man City and Chelsea, isn't it, for the league title. But obviously West Ham riding a serious wave of success at the moment. What's your sort of feelings where we can get at West Ham, though?
Well, like I said, I think, you know, the centre-half, when you're on the opposite side, is going to be, you know, only a small factor, but I think that's something. West Ham are sort of playing a bit more of an counter-attacking side, because they're so good at getting everyone back behind the ball, working hard as a team, and then they break and they've got Antonio. who will run the channels, hold it up, and Ben Rahma's starting to get into his stride, and Bowen's he's been sort of like the thorn in Wolves's back line in recent times. He scored in both fixtures last year, so it's they're a settled side. You just hope that for Wolves' sake that, you know, Jimenez is able to play, because and Wang and whoever else they're deciding that's going to play on the other side, because sort of need that full strength team to go into this game. I feel
I made the tongue-in-cheek comment just about Antonio landing in Kilman's back pocket, and you mentioned about Connor Cody maybe struggling against Antonio. Kim, Mikel Antonio has played against Wolves 10 times, hasn't scored, and has got only one assist, which was in a championship game which Connor Cody didn't play in. So as far as I'm concerned, we've got nothing to worry about, but that's me jinxing Wolves, isn't it?
And another stat for you, Mikel Antonio hasn't scored in the league since August. So that was quite surprising when I saw that stat. I thought, I felt like he'd, and I know he's influential in the team. He does a lot more than score. And obviously his assist counts, I think, is quite high as well this season. However, it's quite surprising that he's obviously, he put one away, didn't he, for Jamaica. But in the Premier League, I've took him out my fantasy Premier League team. Let's be honest. So he's definitely going to score now. I've said all that.
Yeah, he's in my side for at least another week until you have to have little players like them coming up against Wolves, because you can't lose either way. Then that's I'm always a
it's
no
good thinking.
No yeah. lose situation. Yeah. If the score against us, great, I've got points. If not, then Wolves are always the priority anyway. Have a look at the last lineups between both sides. I think the key battle this weekend is going to be Moutinho and Neves coming up against Souček and Declan Rice, isn't it? But you mentioned just Math, that obviously Noah Ogbonna. Who's likely to come in for him? Will it be Craig Dawson, do you think?
I think Dawson, yeah, and probably Zuma will go to the left-hand side. That's my thought.
Is Kufal back yet? Is it Ben Johnson
you're
playing at the moment?
Yeah.
So maybe that's somewhere that Wolves can get at West Ham potentially as well.
I think Marcel is supposedly back in contention, but is Ait Nouri the one who starts for you both, Matt?
Yes, I think so. I haven't seen in recent weeks. I think yes, I think he'll be the best suited, I think, for the game. Also on his performances, I think.
Do you think maybe sacrificing maybe someone like Trincao and having Dendonk to have a bit more physicality in midfield would be the way to go, Kim?
Personally, no. I think we should have enough in centre midfield. And I know that's quite a weird thing to say, but I don't think Souček and Rice have, like, they're obviously mobile, but they're not, like, you know, quick or anything. I think, like, we've had enough in centre midfield with Neves and Moutinho. Personally, I would just probably swap out Trincao for Adama. I think this is a game where it could be end to end. Obviously, West Ham are they play on the break, but I think we could almost. It might be a game of cat and mouse, I think.
Yeah, the first goal will be probably key. Yeah. I said, like earlier, it's five wins against four of West Ham's, and I think most games, apart from last season, have been won by sort of the occasion, the odd goal. What's your score?
Well would be
yeah,
would be obviously huge.
We need Jimenez playing purely for the defensive set pieces, don't we? He is keen both.
Well, it's boxes. For both teams, yeah, for both, yeah. Because Wolves, obviously, Moutinho, it takes a lot of the set pieces, and his qualities, you know, is very, very good. And that's where Wolves can get quite a few goals. But on the flip side, that's where West Ham are very strong. So that set pieces are huge in any game.
As I mentioned earlier, Matt, without trying to shoot yourself in the foot, what's your score prediction Saturday? Or are you just going to sit on the fence?
I 100% sit on that fence today, yeah.
What are you going for? A score draw?
I definitely a score draw, yeah. It can't be a 0-0, that's for sure.
What about you, Kim?
I'm going 2-2.
2-2.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an entertaining one. And I think, yeah, but I can't see either team getting the upper hand. Obviously, West Ham will be really high in confidence after Liverpool. However, I still think that we'll pull it out of the bag and we'll equalise in the last 10 minutes.
I'm going for a 2-1 Wolves. I think, obviously, you mentioned the underdog tag on Saturday. Hopefully, the Molineux crowd rise to the occasion and the players do alongside with it. Before we do a little quiz, we've got Martin Webber's had a comment. Obviously, Matt, football careers are short. What are you doing with yourselves these days?
They certainly are. I am doing the other side of it, so doing the punditry side, so podcasts like this, you like yourself. But yeah, I've been doing some BT, some Sky Sports News and some other bits and pieces. So enjoying doing that because I still feel connected to the game. I watch football all the time, so it's nice to just still be in and around it. So I'd love to carry on and do the punditry side.
Right, I'm going to put Kim on the spot with a couple of Matt Jarvis-based quiz questions now. Hopefully, Matt.
You know what I'm like at quizzes, Dan? Come on, I don't remember things.
No, it's all the gin and tonics that you've had to ruin your memory. Right, start with the first question. Matt, help her out if she struggles. The first question
is... If I can remember.
Matt Jarvis made his England appearance against Ghana. What shirt number did he wear?
Oh, 15?
Is that correct, Matt?
I don't know why I said 15.
It's correct.
17.
It was 15. No, he was 17. For Wolves.
You were right. Oh. You were correct. Right. Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure many people know this, but Matt Jarvis, as a youngster, scored against Wolves in a 1-0 win for Gillingham. Gillingham played the majority of that game with 10 men against a newly relegated Wolves side, which was supposed to be going for back for promotion. Obviously, Matt Jarvis got the goal in October 2004. Who was the Wolves goalie that day, Kim?
2004. Oh my gosh, goalie. Okay, so not Matt Murray. No. What's his name? Michael Oakes. Was it?
I think you're right, aren't you?
Two out of two.
That's correct. Yes, Michael Oakes. Matt Murray was on the bench that day.
That was my first ever professional goal. That.
Obviously, I have
and
to do
Dave
research.
Dave Jones got the sack after that game.
See, you had a lot to blame for in that Jones household over those weeks.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Obviously, I have to do some research into this sort of stuff. And how does Paul Scally have some sort of mind in the future that he predicted you to play for England at the age of 24?
Yeah, I think he was trying to get my price tag up. But yes, he did. He said that I would play for England before I was 25. So he was spot on.
2 months short of his 25th birthday, Kim, he got called up for England years after the Gillingham chairman tried to bump up his transfer price.
I remember that, actually. I remember that comment. Yeah.
Who were you sort of being linked to before you joined Wolves, Matt?
Forest, but I think there was Plymouth, there was Charlton, there was a few others. But I had a call from my agent to say that Mick McCarthy wanted to meet me in Portugal because he was on holiday. And would I go out and meet him? And I was actually bags packed going to the airport with my mates to go on a boys' holiday.
A boys' holiday for culture or...
Yeah, of course, yeah. And then I had to literally put my bags back down, booked a flight and flew out to Portugal, met Mick McCarthy. And that was it.
How do your mates react to a situation like that? Do they not just say, can you not just do it tomorrow? Or, come on, Matt, we've got Falaraki here. What's the situation there from a mate's point of view?
To be honest, I didn't really care what they were going to say, but yeah. I was going to meet McCarthy. But no, they're brilliant. And it made the holiday. I know I missed, they still batter me to this day because I missed the first few days of the holiday. But I met Mick. Absolutely. He's probably the best manager I've ever worked with for me personally. I still speak to him now. He's brilliant, brilliant guy. So
he's
I met
still
him,
got a,
spoke
he's still
to
got
him.
A lot to offer football, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant. Him and Terry Connor were such a good and massive influence on my career. And then, so I met him, obviously knew I wanted to sign at Wolves. I flew back the same day, went up to Molineux the following day, had a little walk round, sorted out everything. And I actually signed my contract with the club secretary, Richard. And I actually got a lift with him and his wife to the airport, who were then on the same flight as me to Marbella. And then it was so strange because I just signed for Wolves. I'm in the airport on my own with my bag going to meet my mates. And I keep spotting him as I walk around. So I don't want to go to the bar and have a drink or celebrate on my own. So I get to the end, get to the airport, get my bag, and I sort of see him as I'm leaving. And him and his wife went one way and I went the other, and went and met my mates. And
two totally different holidays that happened afterwards.
It was amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've just signed for Wolves and just gone and met my mates who I'd missed for the first few days on a boys trip, and it was amazing.
You talk about Mick McCarthy.
You said Mick McCarthy was your favourite manager. Who was the best player that you've played with in your whole career across all the teams that you've played for?
Best player. That's such a difficult question because I've played with a lot of amazing players, but they're all at sort of different stages of their career. You know, I could say like James Maddison, for instance, at Norwich, but he was sort of a lot younger, not the player he is now. I played obviously with Joe Cole at West Ham, but he was more towards the end. Dimitri Payet is probably the only one that I've played when he was sort of in his peak. That first season at West Ham,
he was unreal, wasn't he? He's still one of my favourite players now, and Joel Cole was one of my heroes growing up, so I can't imagine what it was like playing with those.
Exactly. I've always got to give a great mention to Wes Houlihan as well. He was some magician on the ball. But that, you know, if you're looking at as well at Wolves, we just had such a great team. I wouldn't say there was any like standout player.
What about Stefan Meyerhofer?
Yeah, do you know what? I still speak to him now.
Do you really?
I still message each other on Instagram. Yeah, yeah. Still speak to him. What a guy!
You mentioned about Mick McCarthy being like your favourite manager. Did you ever get a proper dressing down from him?
I think everyone has. You know, the biggest compliment I can give him is he was honest. You know, and as players, that's all you want. You know, if you're playing, he would tell you you're playing and why you're playing. If you weren't, he would tell you you're not playing and this is why. And you can argue with him about it, and he would like take your whatever you came on board. But he would say, ultimately, you know, it's my decision. This is why you're not playing. Be ready to come on or whatever. And he was on the training pitch every day with us. It wasn't like he was inside for the first 3 days and then came out and did training. He was there every day. And he just had that aura about him that, you know, when he walked into a room, you were like, oh, it's Mick. Yeah.
It was literally good cop, bad cop with him and Terry.
I wouldn't say he was bad cop, though. Like, he was great. You see all the interviews and everything. He's just funny. I think his sense of humour, like the way he talks, it made us laugh. And it was enjoyable. And like you said, with Terry, he was brilliant. You know, he took me out before, after training, every, you know, whenever we wanted, always wanting to improve players. And that's what he did. And that's what they both did to me. And then what more do I have? I had Tony Daly as the fitness coach as well. Like, it was just perfect for me to improve as a player and adapt. And they all three of them were instrumental in a part of that.
Right, let's see if Kim can get 4 out of 4 on the quiz. She's got 2 already. The next question is...
I was on a roll. I've lost it now.
Obviously, Wolves wing pairing, obviously Matt Jarvis and Michael Cartley on the wing were enjoyed quite a lot by the Wolves fans during that period. But they came up against each other in the Premier League, Stoke versus West Ham in February 2013. What was the final score that day?
This is West Ham. I reckon Stoke were good at that point. 2-0 Stoke.
Do you remember, Matt, before I reveal the answer? No. I just want to ask you. did you enjoy that kit? Because I'm wearing that top right now and I do not enjoy the material of it.
To be honest, I did not care. Magical, you look at that photo, that's iconic. It's brilliant.
Put it up again.
The two of us holding that trophy was just awesome. Absolutely awesome.
The correct answer was West Ham 1-1. And the score of that day was a player who was unfortunate.
Jack Collison.
Yeah.
Oh.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. 1-0 the Britannia Stadium, I think it was. Last question, and this is a bit of a difficult one. It's an audio commentary from a goal that Matt Jarvis scored. I've put a noise over a player's name being mentioned to make it a bit more harder. You've got to name the team that Matt Jarvis scored against from the audio being played now.
Doyle. Jarvis to race onto this. Mm-hmm. Spears has to get his header right. He hasn't managed it. Jarvis is in, and Jarvis will score for Wolves.
It's a difficult one. It's...
must have been in the Premier League.
I'll play it one more time, Matt.
You've got to press the button and I missed it.
Yeah, I'll get it one more time for the listeners at home. It's from a match of the day, a piece of commentary. Matt scores the goal. You've got to name the team that he scores against. Listen up carefully now.
Doyle. Jarvis to race onto this. Mm-hmm. Spears has to get his header right. He hasn't managed it. Jarvis is in, and Jarvis will score for Wolves.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
I'm gonna put the video up on our Twitter page afterwards, and for the people who can't remember it, because it was one of those games that
important. Don't have a guess.
It was such an important game. Wolves got the win that day. Matt gave
it
us
was
the lead. Yeah, think of teams that we were fighting against relegation. Tim Spears. I was thinking of it then.
Were we in the Premier League at this point?
Yeah, Matt, that was our match of the day. It was a team we're fighting against relegation against, and Matt put us in the lead in a 2-1 win. That's all I'll give you.
God, I can't even remember. Norwich?
No, Matt, do you want to give her the answer?
Do you want it? It's Burnley.
It was Burnley. Tyrone Mears was the name that I put some noise over. He tries to edit back to Brian Jensen, and Brian Jensen, who, if football fans out there can remember, wasn't the most fast keeper about coming off his line, and Matt just knocks it around him and taps it in on the line. Wolves won 2-1 that day. Anything you want to ask Matt before we go, Kim?
I don't think so. I think you've pretty much grilled Matt, to be honest, Dan.
It's been a long one.
That's what I'm here for.
Thank you for coming on tonight, Matt, and everyone who's tuned in, listened, commented. Hopefully we'll get you on again in the future. Thanks to everyone who keeps on supporting the Wolves Fancast, a part of the 90 Minute Network, supporting Wolverhampton Eads, the Sports Shop Kings Winford, and our providers, Pixel Yeti Media. We'll be back after the West Ham game, hopefully with a podcast celebrating a win. Take care, everyone.